Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Israel Network. Great to be back. Great to have a beautiful new week. I am on the phone right now because she's in Los Angeles with Fern Baker, Vice President of Development at the Chaim Soloman Center. Thank you so much, Fern, for staying up late on the West Coast to talk to me. So I got it. I'll explain to my listeners. I got an email, which I get many, a few days ago, telling me about your new position. And I've been kind of following you. I'm not a stalker, I promise. But I've been kind of following your career over the years because you have gotten involved, or you have been very involved, with things that also interest me. And that doesn't usually happen, where I see somebody who is like really working hard in institutes and you know, with people that I am so fascinated with. So I'm so glad that we have this opportunity to talk. So let's maybe start from now. What is the Chaim Soloman Center? And what does Vice President of Development do?
Well, the Chaim Soloman Center was founded about a little over a year ago. It was an outgrowth of a think tank in Washington called the Franklin Center. And Paul Miller, who was now the president of the Chaim Soloman Center, was asked to come to Franklin to write about... he was actually doing a story on following the paper trail of taxpayer money going to terrorist organizations. And as he developed that, more and more stories started to develop about Israel and terrorism and BDS and all of the issues we're concerned with today. And it became such a big part of the Franklin Center that they decided to spin it off. And Paul started the Soloman Center with a small board and a handful of really top journalists at the beginning of 2015. And we've really had a banner year. They've published over 800 articles in various...
800 articles?
Over 800 publishing.
Wow.
Many of them are also repeated and other mentioned, quoted, and other publications by other organizations and other journalists. So it's really a snowball effect. And
all right, so I've got a bunch of questions to ask you, but before I forget, can you give if people who are listening want to see some of those articles, can we just do the website now, get that over with, and then I can ask you the questions?
Sure. www.solomoncenter.org.
How do you spell Soloman?
And Soloman is S-A, very important, S-A-L-O-M-O-N-C-E-N-T-E-R.
Okay, so getting back to that, just a couple questions that, and excuse me if they're silly questions, but I think that, you know, a lot of times we hear these expressions and we're not really sure what they mean. So what is a think tank? All right, we keep hearing about think tanks, and I think a lot of us hear about think tanks, hear about papers that they put out or things that they do or conference that they have, and wonder to ourselves, except for people in the think tanks earning their salaries, are they having an effect on anything? You know, there's all these think tanks in Washington. What are they actually doing? So you're saying that your think tank is publishing articles and the journalists are doing,
we're
research?
We're not a think tank. Chaim Soloman
okay,
Center is not a think tank.
Franklin
is. It's actually a media and education organization. So
okay.
We're there to disseminate truth and facts and news. So we're a little bit different than what one would call a think tank. A think tank is usually an institute where researchers, PhDs gather to research areas that are important. They are thought makers. They are there to put out papers that will eventually influence policy. So that is essentially what a think tank does. And there could be emphasis on different areas of thought, education, academics, politics,
right,
insurance, all of that kind of thing. But
so I mean, sometimes I wonder if, what we have with a think tank is almost circular reasoning. Like somebody who's very wealthy establishes a think tank because there's a certain position or certain political leaning or certain ideology that they have. They hire the people who will promote that certain line, and then they put out the papers hoping to influence people who aren't there, to get people who are already there to be emboldened. Does that happen also?
Well, there's definitely an agenda for a think tank,
mm-hmm.
and usually the people that support it are on board with that agenda.
Right.
So,
which makes sense.
You know, you have to raise money to pay your researchers and your thinkers,
mm-hmm.
and the idea is to present those ideas over time to people who make decisions.
Mm-hmm. The top of the food chain.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but also to influence, you know, other things. I was involved from the beginning with the Herzl Institute in Jerusalem, and that was an academic think tank.
Right. So if you already mentioned the Herzl Institute, because Yoram Chazoni is one of my favorite modern age thinkers. I'm in the middle, actually, of reading one of his new book now on Megillat Esther. I mean, the revised of the Dawn. And
right.
I go to almost every conference that he gives because he has broadened my outlook on things and caused me to relate to the Bible and to Christianity, where he just had a conference a couple months ago with leading theologians in a very exciting and new way, at least for me.
Absolutely.
So when you say the Herzl Institute, I know the kind of people that you were working with.
Right. Great scholars. Really
great scholars.
And the range of research is broad there. But it essentially designed to be a Bible institute because all of our great ideas stem from the Bible, and mm-hmm. we wanted to disseminate that to students, to grad students, post-grad students, clergy, lay leaders, so that the Bible and Jewish thought and Jewish politics from the Bible could be seen in a contemporary perspective.
Right.
Judaism has been marginalized academically for a couple of hundred years now, and
mm-hmm.
that was the MO of the Herzl Institute, and Yoram's Institute before that, the Shalem Center, was to bring Judaism back to at least to the table in academia, at least to be part of the discussion in a very relevant and significant way, where it once was. I mean, there's no question that Judaism was influenced. Certainly the founders of this country, of the United States, and I think people forget that it did.
Well, I think with the underpinnings of what we call now, you know, the West or Western culture,
right,
is, we call the Judeo-Christian culture, but it's absolutely, the source of it is in, you know, the Bible, the Old Testament, and the fact that so many people for way too long have felt that it was just a dusty collection of stories and had no relevance to the modern world, to modern politics, to modern thinking, to family life, to the structure, to a certain kind of moral code, perhaps, that we want to see in the West, the value of life and the love of life, of a loving God and a caring God who's on our side, that's not fighting against us. And all these things now are, I think, are issues that the world at large is struggling with. And I mean, I feel, you know, as a Jew, and I imagine you feel the same, that the answers are here. We've just maybe forgotten them or,
right,
you know, thought again that they weren't relevant. So it's fascinating for me that you spent time working in the Herzl Institute with really people, very, very intelligent people with that kind of understanding of past and present. But you also spent some time with CAMRA,
right,
with the media organization. So maybe tell
us
a little bit about that.
I started my professional Jewish career with CAMRA,
mm-hmm,
about 6 years ago.
So for those who don't know, in your words, what CAMRA is?
I was the Midwest Regional Director.
Mm-hmm.
I did both programming and development, built up the Midwest for Camera. It was really, really a great chapter. And unfortunately, there is no Chicago office right now, but there are still Camera activists in Chicago, and I'm sure one day they'll.
Right. So Camera, for my listeners who don't know, and I'm on the Israeli board of Camera, which is why I really, you know, admire the things that they do. An organization, a committee for accuracy of the media reporting out of the Middle East. They're the ones who, you know, hold the feet to the fire of Haaretz and other and many other journalists who misreport what's happening here, the New York Times, of course. So you have this really interesting mix of, you know, having worked for an organization that's very much about the media and about truth in reporting, which is hard to find these days.
Right.
Working with academics who, to some degree, I don't know if you could say, you know, the ultimate truth, because I don't think that anybody has the ultimate truth, but trying to find, again, the connection between the Bible and the ancient world and the modern world as well, what value some of these ancient texts have for our modern life, what we can still learn from so long ago. In 2016,
exactly.
We don't know everything.
The Herzl Institute was not only about the Bible. There were
right.
many other
Much
projects.
Beyond that.
Project.
Oh, modern
like,
politics. Yeah, absolutely.
Modern politics, current ancient history, geopolitics. There are many projects going concurrently, but the original, but Urim's field is political thought of the Bible, and
right.
you know, I became friends and colleagues with him because he spoke for Camera many, many times for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to Chicago for me. I booked him when his book, The Philosophy of Hebrew Scripture, came out. So, I mean, basically, with an academic think tank like that, you're trying to influence academia, and they're succeeding because they're now publishing books that are, you will see in university curriculums. All their books are being published by various presses like Princeton,
right, Cambridge, right.
So,
right.
So that's a marvelous thing. And public policy is influenced by academia. It takes decades for it to trickle down.
To trickle in.
And
so getting back to Fern Baker
right.
and now this position that you have at the Solomon Center. So, I mean, I wanted to talk about your background because you didn't just land this job because you knew somebody who knew somebody. You know, you have like a lot of strands that are now intertwining and a lot of skill set. And one of the things that I noticed on your own profile is you talk about how leadership and communication skills have really gotten you to where you are. So how do you, is that something you develop? Is that something you learn? Is that something you're born with? How would you characterize
your
present?
All right, the real truth about development is it's salesmanship. You have to,
mm-hmm.
you have to be able to make the case for what you represent. In development, you're fundraising, and you need to convey your need and your mission to people who would naturally be on your page. So
mm-hmm.
With all of the organizations out there, it's hard to make the case because everybody does great things. I know not everybody, but many organizations do great things. And many people are asked all the time to donate to this and that. And,
right.
And it's a very, very competitive world. You know, you can compare it to, car dealerships. I mean, you have to make
mm-hmm.
the sale, and you have to make the case, and you have to get the points across. But you also have to build relationships. And that's part of leadership. Not only to have the relationship, you can't only. I think it's harder to go to your close friends than it is to go to people that you know professionally.
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to build these relationships. They have to trust you, and they have to see that you're really putting your all behind your cause. And have seen a history where they say, you know, she's a really hard worker. She has a passion for Israel. She understands what's going on, And I'm more than happy to invite her to my office or go out for a cup of coffee and hear what she has to say.
Mm-hmm.
And once you can get to that point, if you can make the case, then, you know, hopefully that you will be successful. Chaim Solomon Center is new, relatively new, but we have some good support, which is always a good springboard to get more support. But we're a very, very aggressive media organization. We have are doing something unique that many of the organizations who do media watchdog kind of work are not doing. We're creators of new material. We have
you're not just criticizing what's out there.
Instead of being mm-hmm. reactive to what's mm-hmm. out there, we're setting the tone. We're creating the
proactive
articles. We have positive mm-hmm. articles. We have articles that have, we've broken many stories. You just have to go on our website to see the stories that we did break. We, as we expand by obtaining more Cracker Jack journalists like the ones that we have, and we have them of all ages, and we intend also to start bringing in cohorts of campus students, who can do the same kind of reporting on campus. We feel that we can really make a difference in this whole boycott, divestment and sanctions agenda.
Disaster.
Of, people are trying to bring down the Jewish state in a very, very devious and deceitful way. So
yes.
That's
yeah.
our
to be cool,
goal.
To be in, to be popular, you know, you have to be anti-Israel these days, pro-Palestinian. It's amazing. But
right.
that's what's going on the campuses.
Oh,
yeah.
It's egregious, it's mendacious, it's devious, the way that they are attracting students and Jewish students on top of it.
Right.
It's very disheartening.
Especially.
And
mm-hmm.
we can no longer just sit back and do kind of cheerleading events for Israel or Israel Film Festival or Hummus parties and
or explaining
kind of
how great we are in high tech, that nobody's laptop could work without Israeli technology.
Right, we've
it's not
it,
enough.
We've done it. Now
right.
we have to take a much more aggressive route, using our pens and using our voices and using our cameras to expose what is truly going on in campus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we need to do.
It sounds like you're the perfect person for this, with a mixed background, both working with academics and with media watchdog groups.
Well,
but I wanted to ask you, Fern, like, do you feel that being a woman has helped you, hindered you? I know you're a mom, and of course, you know, a lot of energy goes into raising kids. Like, you know, how do you see this all?
Well, I do have to say my kids were already in college when I began this kind of work professionally.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a long history of lay leadership, synagogue, organization. In fact, I did volunteer work for the Shalem Center even before I even knew Yora. So I've
mm-hmm.
always been very, very into it. I have a Jewish studies background. I have an undergraduate degree. I have a graduate degree. I taught in the Jewish day school system in Canada, where I'm from originally. And
mm-hmm.
So I've always been very, very involved. And I have to say, I have two boys who are now in their 20s and working. And they've been to Israel, and they did the birthright thing. And I lament the time that they won't experience Israel the way I experienced Israel. I mean, I was there, you know, in the 70s, in the early 70s, as a student, where it was an incredible feeling of freedom, and you could run around the old city, and you had, you know, we all have tales of great relationships with Arabs in the old city, and and hitchhiking and things you wouldn't normally expect your kids to do today. Certainly, if they did them, you would be concerned. There's worry. I know Israelis handled all of this much better, but it's just not the same sense. And certainly, Israel was regarded back in the day after the 67 war. They were the underdogs. They were revered. I remember that Life magazine cover of the soldier, a full-face cover photo. It was a very exciting time. And my goal is to see that happen again. You know, I would love my kids and eventually my grandkids to go to Israel and feel safe and feel really proud and you know, not to have these horrible concerns about going to college and hearing all kinds of.
So I don't know if I can help rest you easy a little bit, but as someone who's living here, raising kids here and has grandchildren here now, I think we feel safer than most people think we should. And we go around and we do those things. I don't know if we're ever going to get back to the idyllic days of the 60s and the 70s in Israel or in America or anywhere in the world for that matter.
I agree.
The entire world has unfortunately become a much more dangerous place. And I think, you know, in our lifespan, so we've seen that happen. We've seen the shift, which is just sad. I think it's just sad for humanity.
Right.
But the battle for Israel and for the safety of Israel, I really do believe, is the battle of the West for the safety of itself.
Right.
And that's what you're doing.
Our organization is also concerned with. It's not, we don't write only about Israel. We're concerned with issues that impact the West. Are bringing down the West, so it's really
we're all in that same boat. Yeah, we're all in that same boat for sure. Okay, well, thank you so much. I'll let you get to sleep now. I'm sure you have a busy week, but I will. First of all, next time you come to Israel, please, I would love to really have a cup of coffee with you, and I'll be following what you do, Fern Baker, because I think it's really great. I think you're doing what I hope that I, to some degree, am doing, which is why I kind of connected, which is taking all the strands and all the experiences that we've had, you know, raising kids, you know, things that we've done in a volunteer capacity, other jobs that we've had or not jobs, just experiences, travel.
Everything contributes to where you are at the moment.
Every book we've read, every person we've spoken to, and kind of bringing it together and trying to communicate all of that very personal yet bigger than we are ideas and passion for the things that we love, for Israel, for the Jewish people, for America, for Canada, for the Western world. And I think it's great that really Solomon Center, marvelous choice in having you there.
I pray that it goes from strength to strength, and I hope that your listeners will tune in and look at our
website
and read our articles. We're really up to the minute. And
maybe even get involved. If anyone's listening whose kids are in the colleges, or, you know, it's not just a matter of coming in and just passively reading some of your articles. Maybe some of my listeners can get involved, because one of the things that I exhort all the time is we can't just be bystanders in what's happening to our world. We have to get active in some way and help the good guys.
Absolutely. And by the way, we have a young journalist, Eliana Rudy, who lives in Israel now and is doing a fantastic job. She's being published her articles on Jerusalem, and some of them are just observations, are being published in all kinds of publications like USA Today. And
She's
out of college a couple of years. She's fantastic. So,
well, I'm going to get in touch with her.
Absolutely.
I'll bring her in here too.
Great.
That's terrific. Okay, thanks,
Thank
Fern.
You,
Have
Eva.
A great
it's
week.
It's really a pleasure to talk to you. I've heard so much about you on a personal level, and this was awesome. So, good luck to you too.
Thank you so much. Okay, everybody, that was Fern Baker, newly of the Solomon Center, but not only. And this is Eve Hara of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network, with many thanks, as always, to Ben Bresky, without whom I cannot make a move, my technician. Have a great week, everybody. Take care. Bye for now.